This week on Come Receive the Light, we'll have a conversation about effectively ministering to youth.
Kids are wired to make an impact. And when they see, you know, sort of these token, why don't you be on a committee, or, you know, why don't you take flowers to a shut-in, all of which is fine, that is not enough to engage them in a more sustainable kind of way.
Every church wrings its hands at various times about the small or diminishing youth group. Is there a magic formula for bringing young people into the church and giving them a true sense of belonging and purpose?
And so it feels like the biggest misconception is seeing teenagers as those folks who are on hold until they grow up enough. And, you know, the root word of that is elder. And so we are ruled by elders, and it's about, you know, let's wait your turn until you get to be an elder. And the truth is, most kids are not going to wait their turn. They're going to go to some place that they can make an impact.
If you have teenagers in your family, if you are concerned about the youth of your church, if you have a passion for youth evangelism, if you were ever a teenager, stay tuned. This broadcast is for everyone. We have a great conversation ahead. Welcome to Come Receive the Light. I'm Mike Trout, and our host is Father Christopher Metropoulos, and we'll hear from Father Chris in just a moment. If you follow us online or receive our regular emails about upcoming programming, we're making a change in today's broadcast. Father Chris talked with both of the guests planned for today longer than anticipated, which usually means the discussions went well. And so we're going to feature only one of the two interviews planned for today and come back to the other sometime very soon, and I'll let you know when that is. Speaking of recording things, producing media in all of its forms, as we do here at Come Receive the Light and the Orthodox Christian Network, is very costly. If you've been to our website, you know that we produce videos, we make them available, we have books available, we have a marvelous blog, we write articles, there are other audio resources, our online radio stations, and of course, this weekly visit called Come Receive the Light. It is costly. We also believe that saying nothing can be even more costly in the long run. Will you stand with us as we seek to share the timeless Orthodox Christian faith with North America and the entire world? Please make a parish contribution to OCN in 2014 and tell the faithful of your parish about the Orthodox Christian Network. Your parish can financially support OCN in a number of ways, and we have some suggestions on our website for you, plus resources that we have available and we can send out. The website again is myocn.net. That's myocn.net. Just click on the Donate Now button on the homepage for more details. The Orthodox Christian Network is commissioned by the Assembly of Bishops to serve the entire church and to promote unity among Orthodox Christians in North America and around the world. Thus, OCN is not underwritten financially by any one organization, jurisdiction, or individual. Rather, OCN is supported almost entirely by parish and personal donations. When your parish supports OCN, you contribute to Orthodox evangelism and unity here in America. We appreciate that. Please remember OCN in your parish's charitable giving. And now with our feature conversation for this week, here's our host, Father Chris.
Mark DeVries is the founder and president of Ministry Architects, a hands-on coaching service that has become the nation's leading provider of youth ministry, children's ministry, and small church consulting. Mark is also the author of a number of books on youth ministry, youth pastors, and marriage. He's also the pastor at the First Presbyterian Church in Nashville, Tennessee. Mark, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Father Chris. I probably should make a quick correction there that I'm the youth pastor here at First Presbyterian Church, in case my pastor happens to listen to this this program.
Definitely. We know how those senior pastors can be. I know. Well, you are a minister of the Presbyterian Church, but I've been told that you work with a wide range of denominations. Let me ask you, I guess, the obvious question. Do you think the challenges and goals of youth ministry are pretty much the same everywhere you go, or does each denomination really impact the youth culture of a church?
Well, that's a great question. You know, the truth is, there is as much difference between individual churches in the same tradition as there is between any two traditions. So, you know, our general experience is that we're all seeing the same sort of challenges with our kids as we're trying to engage them in a vital life in Christ. You may be familiar with the National Study of Youth and Religion that Christian Smith did several years back, and you know, he studied this demographic, the largest study of adolescent spirituality ever done, and he identified different groupings. So, you know, mainline evangelicals, conservative evangelicals, even Mormons and black Protestants, Catholic. But across the board, he observed that all of them tend to have embraced the sort of theological foundation of what he called moralistic therapeutic deism, that most kids believe in God. That's deism. Mm-hmm. They believe they should be good, and God wants them to be good. That's the moralistic and therapeutic. They believe God can make them more comfortable or help them when they have problems. But Smith says, you know, that is part of the problem, is that we're raising kids with sort of a bland mush God, mm-hmm. bland mush theology, and but the answer to your question is, yeah, it does seem like we're all sort of facing the same kind of challenges as we're trying to engage kids in this culture.
What do you think some of the biggest challenges we're facing today? I mean, I know with our own youth group here. We have them. Some years it's up, some years it's down. What I've found is when you engage them in something, they will understand and see Christ in those people they're being engaged with. But let's go to what you feel. What are the biggest challenges you see?
Well, I would say that most churches have a very sentimental view of what youth ministry ought to be. In other words, we just have this idea that it just sort of organically happens. And that kids just sort of naturally connect with a leader, or that, you know, if we just get a kind of a superstar mm-hmm. youth director in there, that'll pretty much take care of our problems. And the truth is, youth ministry, yes, is fundamentally about relationships and building these cross-generational relationships. But unless we create deliberate structure for that to happen, what's going to happen is that the generations will naturally separate and isolate from each other, and those things don't naturally happen because we hire a youth worker, and so I hear a lot of youth workers use language about, you know, for me it's all about relationships, and when I dig down deeper, what that really means is for me it's all about me. It's all about what I do. It's all about the relationships I build with students. And, you know, I figure that the Alpha and the Omega could actually do about 12 kids in his youth group. So I think anything over 12 is probably a little bit arrogant if we're going to make the relationships all about us.
Mark, you know, I've been thinking about youth ministry my whole life. I've been working in it my whole life. I'm 60 now. We have 6 children of our own. And I've watched and seen a lot. And I wonder if we were doing such a bang-up job in youth ministry, why are 6 out of 10, to the latest statistic I found, why are 6 out of 10 kids not coming back to their church and leaving? Obviously, we're missing the boat, aren't we?
Well, yeah, and I think if the culture were static, in other words, if we were comparing apples to apples of 50 years ago and now, I would say the problem is in youth ministry. But the truth is, there have been dramatic and fundamental shifts in the culture and in the nature of what adolescence is in our culture. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I would say, if anything, it's not necessarily an indictment on youth ministry that, you know, 6 out of 10 are not, you know, retaining their faith or practicing their faith. But it does say to us, we got to change the way we're doing things.
Well, I know for us, we were very interested years ago in a basketball tournament. You know, we said, well, the basketball will bring them. They'll come. Look at them. They're coming by the busload, and they're playing basketball. And I would sit back and say, what does that have to do with Christ?
Yeah.
Where is Christ in that? I mean, I would have thought if we taught Christ more and maybe basketball as the elective, if you would, rather than make it the course, make it the elective, we might have done things a little better. But I don't want to be too harsh, but on the other side, I see a problem that we're facing.
Yeah, I think generally we have done a pretty good job of introducing kids to a loving God. And most kids are leaving our ministry still believing in God and still wanting to be a disciple of Jesus at some, you know, vague definition. What we haven't done, in my thinking, which is tied into how we're tracking, you know, the retention of young people, what we haven't done is help them engage in a vital Christian community. Mm-hmm. So we may have, you know, we have brought them into a really profound youth group experience, which becomes an orphaning structure for them, and they leave youth group and they don't know what it's like to be a part of the life of a church. Mm-hmm. And so it feels like there's a gap there. The data we don't have is where would we be if we hadn't been doing youth ministry these last 50 years?
Yeah.
You know, we may be more like Europe if that were the case. And so, like you, I don't want to be too hard on youth ministry, but I do want to raise the flag and say we've got to be thinking differently. We got to be prototyping. Let's imagine if this particular approach is not knocking it out of the park. What can we try,
right,
kind of as a next faithful response to a very different kind of culture? I feel like the folks at Sticky Faith at the Fuller Youth Initiative,
mm-hmm,
I feel like they're beginning to get after it a little bit. Are you familiar with those materials?
I'm not, but I am. I'm going to be now.
Yeah, I'll let you in on it. Well, Kara Powell is the professor there who has sort of done a research project on kids and the sort of stickiness of their faith after they leave high school. And this is starting with kids who were active in youth ministry when they were seniors in high school, which of course is a small number.
Mm-hmm.
But of that group, there's a disappointing percentage, probably the 40% that you mentioned, that's still hanging on to their faith,
mm-hmm,
or practicing their faith in some way. I mean, it's always a little bit tenuous to say that they've lost their faith because, you know, those of us who watch kids go into college and then out and then return back to a vibrant faith after college, you know, it's not uncommon. But this tracking that she has done has yielded a whole series of resources around the Sticky Faith Initiative. So they've just come out in the last month or so with the Sticky Faith Launch Kit that a church can begin to implement in their own context that helps put the kind of systems in place that maximize the chances of kids, you know, living out their faith as they move off to college.
Excellent.
And the interesting thing is the particular style or model of the youth ministry is not central to that process. What is central to that process is kids connecting they describe it as the quantity and the quality of relationships with the adults in the congregation, other Christian adults outside their family.
I just looked it up here now. Sticky Faith Curriculum, Sticky Faith. All right, everybody. So we've got to look that up and see what's going on there. It sounds exciting.
Yeah, they're doing some great work in that regard.
Okay, very good. Mark, a year or two ago, I think it was, Professor Kenda Dean was on the program, and she does a lot of work on faith retention in youth. And one of the programs, she was very critical of Sunday school because it often pulls children out of the sanctuary during a Sunday service and into the classroom. So They aren't worshiping as part of the larger community, which is something you referenced there. And they aren't witnessing their parents actually worshiping. Your thoughts about Sunday school? I don't know if you do that in your church, at the Presbyterian Church, but we have it here. They worship most of the liturgy, and then right after receiving Holy Communion, they leave to go to Sunday school. So they see part of it, but I'd be interested in your thoughts.
Yeah, well, you know, one of the challenges is when kids have a choice between a grade level or an age level, more contextualized program for them, and worshiping the larger community that's not as targeted to them, they will almost always choose the program that is designed for them. The problem is that, you know, kids would rather separate from their parents on Sunday morning. Parents would rather have their kids separate from them. And so there's a, you know, I think in an ideal world, and many churches are not many, a number of churches now. I had lunch with a youth pastor at a large church down the street from me, and he said, you know, 3 years ago they canceled their Sunday morning youth programming, and they kids just either go to worship or they assist in the children's ministry. We're seeing, you know, more and more of an interest in that, particularly as this research about sticky faith comes out. You know, I also want to recognize that it's a much messier question than, you know, just in the abstract. And so, you know, the truth is many, many congregations will continue to offer a Sunday school program that's going to happen before worship happens. But, yeah, in an ideal world, if we were to say no more Sunday morning separate age-level classes for kids maybe over fourth grade, and those kids are all in worship, you know, it'd be a great experiment. And for those kids that come, you got to believe it's going to have a deeper impact on their, you know, on their faith than just coming to a what I call a horizontalized program that's just kids at the same age and stage.
Well, it's also, too, I think you mentioned it in the beginning, cultural and actually a technological shift in the culture. So we have the issues of the family, that being questioned, male, female roles. We have the issue of technology, which has burst onto the scene, where everybody communicates now via Facebook or text. So we also have, on top of that, kids then go into the classroom, and the foundation that from which we teach has remained the same, but the foundation that they have built outside with their families is very different. It doesn't seem as if many times we're in partnership anymore. We're kind of going in like a rocket blasting off from both ends.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. You know, Kenda would probably say it's an epistemological question. You know, how do they learn? And can churches move quickly enough? Mm-hmm. Are they willing to move quickly enough to adjust what we do in worship so that kids who are being formed in the ways they learn by the technology they use, are we willing to make some adjustments there? And so, you know, in our peculiar context here, what we have decided to do is we have it's like a laboratory, like a prototype worship experience that's on Sunday evenings that is for the entire church. But it is a place that allows us to experiment with other ways of learning, other ways of hearing, other ways of experiencing worship. With, you know, it's not just, hey, we're going to use guitars instead of the organ. It's creating a laboratory for those sorts of things to happen. Not perfect, but at least it doesn't force us to bet the farm on Sunday mornings and say, okay, we're going to do a wholesale change on Sunday morning, but it does give a place to invite kids into a worshiping community.
Let me ask you this, Mark. How about common misperceptions about Christian youth? What are adults misunderstanding?
The one that concerns me the most is that most adults see adolescence as a holding tank where we just want kids to, if you can just hang in there and not lose your faith during these years, sort of this kind of defensive posture. But our experience is, by the time a young person is a senior in high school, if that young person is not in some sort of leadership role, if they don't have some kind of responsibility, they have begun to check out. Mm-hmm. And but most churches have little or no real responsibility that kids can have at that age. So, you know, maybe they can read scripture periodically on Sunday morning, or they can usher. But in terms of, you know, kids are wired for heroism. That's what Kenda says in her book, Practicing Passion. Kids are wired to make an impact. And when they see, you know, sort of these token, why don't you be on a committee, or, you know, why don't you, you know, once a year take flowers to a shut-in, all of which is fine, that is not enough to engage them in a more sustainable kind of way. And so it feels like the biggest misconception is seeing teenagers as those folks who are on hold until they grow up enough. And, you know, of course, Presbyterian, the root word of that is elder. And so we are ruled by elders, and it is about, you know, let's wait your turn until you get to be an elder. And the truth is, most kids are not going to wait their turn. They're going to go to some place that they can make an impact.
Okay.
So I think that's the biggest one I'm observing.
No, that's a good point. Very good point. Kids are wired for heroism. I love that. Let's ask this question. One thing that every parish can do to improve youth ministry, regardless of the group size, the parish budget, all the things, frankly, the excuses we usually hear.
Mm-hmm. I think every parish can invite young people into leadership. Every parish can, you know, in my little church I grew up in Waco, Texas, you know, that we never got it right. But the pastor was deliberate about, you know, there. I just remember two or three times in my teenage years, my pastor took me out to lunch and asked me questions as if my opinion mattered. And rather than reading a book about what teenagers think, or reading broad studies about what teenagers believe, what every church can do is actually know and listen to them. And one of the things that Christian Smith observed in this National Study of Youth and Religion is that for most of the interviews they did, and they did hundreds of interviews and thousands of surveys, most of the interviews, he said it was like this was the first time an adult had ever asked them, what do you believe? Mm. And just stepping into the particularity of an individual kid kind of wrestling through the fuzziness of what it is they believe and trying to land somewhere, that is something I believe that every church can do, kind of one kid at a time.
And finally, Mark, what are one or two things you think are critical for youth to have sort of locked in their minds when they leave for college? Forget the heavy theology. What's the core of what we as parents and ministers should be conveying to our children about God?
Well, I'm going to go ahead and just follow Jesus on this one and say, we want you to, you know, your life is about loving God and loving people. And let's get those two things right. And sort of as a foundation for that, there is a God who in Jesus Christ has loved you and continues to love you, and you cannot doubt your way out of His love. You cannot sin your way out of His love. You can't walk off the map of grace. And inviting kids to this sort of prodigal God who continues to relentlessly, right, Manning language, furiously pursue us in love, regardless of how often we fail and don't get it right. I think those are the things I would want my kids to have as they leave the home.
Mark, it's been great to have you on the program. You're a delight to speak to, and we wish you the very best.
Brother, great to be with you. Blessings on you, and hope things go well.
Thank you.
I have the feeling that Father Chris is going to invite Mark back to talk about some other related subjects on future broadcasts. We have a link to Mark DeVries and his website, Ministry Architects, on our website at myocn.net. That's myocn.net. All this month on Come Receive the Light, we're talking about effectively reaching children and youth. And next week, we tackle the subject of children from 1 to 5 with Melissa Songranos from the Greek Orthodox Archdiocese Center for Family Care.
You know, as our brain's building pathways during those early years and our children are laying the pathways and the neurons are connecting, it just makes sense to build these pathways and connections to God.
That's coming up next week on Come Receive the Light with Father Christopher Metropoulos. I'm Mike Trout. Thanks, as always, to our executive producer, Ann Dankert. And remember to always have faith in what you listen to.